It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It is just two short weeks until the nation decides, and according to the Times, we have already decided, and in some numbers. Apparently, this morning's newspapers make for more grim reading for Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party. This morning's YouGov poll, which canvassed more than 100,000 voters over a week, gives the Conservatives a massive 359 seats, a huge majority of 68, which would have make the way clear for Boris Johnson to do whatever he likes. It's bad news for the Lib Dems as well, who are projected to get just 13 seats. That's only one more than they got the last time. And if the predictions are correct, we will definitely be out of the European Union by the end of January, if not before. Coming up, we'll be discussing how the campaign is now turning decidedly nasty and personal with Shadow International Trade Minister Barry Gardner. But we want to hear from you as well, because yours are the voices that count, and the votes that count, of course, as well, come December the 12th. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Coming up later on, we'll be asking why geography students are being described as not very bright, posh, six. And we'll be discussing why anti-Semitism and Islamophobia have become such a big issue in this election with Dr. Rakib Hassan from the Henry Jackson Society. But don't forget, as I said, we want to hear from you as well, because your voices are the ones that count right here on Talk Radio, because we are your election station. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station in the world. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The human zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Started with a schoolgirl who was running home to her mum and dad. Told them she was playing in the change room of the lockup.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. 0344 499 1000. Pretty miserable reading for the Labour Party this morning on the front page of the Times. Johnson heads for big majority. We'll see whether that comes to pass. A little bit earlier on, I spoke to Barry Gardner, who is, of course, Shadow International Trade Secretary and candidate for the Labour Party for Brent North. I did ask him whether this poll was actually bad news for the Tories.
I certainly hope they do. but of course, what I want is I want it to galvanise our people. We've got everything to play for. In all of the recent weeks, what's happened is the poll margins have narrowed as we've caught up the Tories, and we've got 2 weeks now to overtake them. That's what I want to see on December the 12th, and I'm confident we can do it.
Now, you're announcing today plans for 10 new national parks in England, and I'm looking at the briefing document in which you're talking about restocking the land, basically, with all sorts of things like hedgehogs and otters and all the rest of it. I suppose you'd be wishing that they had the vote, wouldn't you?
Well, look, what I think everybody wishes is that their children can grow up still being able to see otters and hedgehogs. And the tragedy is that we're losing species in this country at such a dreadful rate. So it really does need something dramatic. And what we've proposed today, this investment in new national parks and in the 2 billion new trees that we're proposing to be planted by 2040, that is a huge boost to our natural environment. this plan for nature that we have. And of course, it's not only about wildlife and species, it's actually also about combating climate change, because this will enable us to reduce our carbon emissions. I think if you look at what we're proposing, it would actually store up to about 47 million tons of CO2 each year by 2050. That's more than Finland produces in an entire year. So it's really important that we take the natural environment seriously for the climate change policies, but also, I think, because these are really special places for people in this country. It's where they want their children to be able to relax and enjoy the natural environment and learn what, you know, the wider world looks like rather than just the insides of a city. And it's very important for the economy of our rural communities, where national parks and the tourism that they generate provide so many jobs for the local economy.
Now, you're going to plant 2 billion trees, which is a massive number. It says you're going to do it by 2040, which is like 21 years away. So there's an awful lot of tree planting. What about where these actual national parks are going to be? Have you identified where they're going to be set up?
Well, of course, we've got candidates, as it were, because we need to discuss this fully with local people, and because they need to really see the benefits coming to them from these new national parks. But we've looked at areas that are already spectacular areas of natural beauty in our country. You take the Malvern Hills or the Chilterns, the Lincolnshire Wolds or the North Pennines. These are already iconic landscapes, and what we want to do is we want to ensure that where there is at the moment environmental degradation, we want to see how we can restore that and improve that and make sure that these places really are as beautiful as they can possibly be. And that, I think, is something that local people will see the benefits of in the jobs that we create through that tree planting, through that work that will go on to remediate the natural environment.
Now, yesterday you were involved in a big announcement with Jeremy Corbyn about the NHS, a document, a 451-page document, which mentions the NHS only 4 times. You got a little bit tetchy yourself with one of the questioners who asked if you wanted to apologise for the anti-Semitism thing. Is the campaign starting to turn a bit nasty?
No, look, the campaign's not turning, well, certainly not as far as I'm concerned, the campaign's not turning nasty. The question that you talk about had already been asked, that was the first point. And also the questioner didn't talk about what was the issue that the press conference was on. I was simply chairing the press conference, and of course it was my job to try and make sure that we kept on track and answered all the questions about the way in which the government in this 451 pages is seen to be selling our NHS down the river, because all of these...
But it's not, is it? I mean, nobody's really buying that, I don't think.
Oh, no, I think they are. I think anybody who reads these documents can be under no doubt that what's happened here is they're talking about, for example, drug pricing. Now, this is something that the Prime Minister and Matt Hancock said, no, absolutely not. We're not discussing drug pricing at all. We're not discussing patents. Yet here it is in the document.
But this is from Theresa May's time in charge from 2 years ago. So maybe he's telling the truth.
No, I'm sorry. It's not. The latest ones were simply in July this year.
Right, but I mean, that's still a long time ago in terms of a Tory government, because Boris Johnson was only just in coming in as Prime Minister. It seems to me, and I don't blame you for doing it, but it seems to me it's a bit like saying Manchester City haven't ruled out selling Raheem Sterling because they haven't actually issued a statement saying that they're not selling him.
Well, I think if you look at what this government has been doing and all the direction in which it has gone, we have seen privatisation in our health service under this government already double. That's an increase of $9 billion in the services that are being taken out for private profit. And what these documents show is that there's a very advanced stage discussions have gone on, which they denied were taking place, remember. And you know, one might feel more secure if the government had said, yes, these discussions are taking place, but there's no question of us ever doing what the Americans want. But in fact, what they did was they denied these discussions.
Well, they've denied discussions have been taking place to sell off the NHS. They have, in fact, admitted that they were taking place in terms of talking about pharmaceuticals being sold, because Boris Johnson said that in the House of Commons.
Look, can I be clear? You know, the government have denied that these discussions are taking place. And when you say sell off the NHS is not a building that you can sell. What it is it's a series of services. And what these documents show is that every one of those services is now up for attack by big American corporations. And that's how you undermine the NHS. That's how you destroy it. You destroy it from within.
But everybody in every single election has always told us that the Tories are going to destroy the NHS, and the Tories have been in charge of the NHS for more times in terms of years than the Labour Party have, and they've never destroyed the NHS. So why would they suddenly want to destroy the NHS, and why would anybody from America want to buy the NHS?
Mike, you say that they haven't destroyed the NHS. Let's look at the difference between the NHS today and the NHS under a Labour government in 2010. We've now got 4 million people who are waiting longer than 18 weeks for
operations. We've got a lot more people in the country than we had in 2010.
We've got operations that are being cancelled at the last minute. The government targets on A&E waiting more than 4 hours in A&E are now 3 million. They used to be less than 300,000. You say that they're not destroying the NHS. The facts are that the NHS is absolutely being starved of cash, and part of the way in which it will be starved even further.
It's got £150 billion going into it every year, Barry.
Yes, but you know, Mike, that that's not what is required. We have an aging population, we have an increasing population, and the money that is needed in the NHS is simply not there.
Yes, but it's not quite right to say it's being starved of money. But
well,
I know you
is.
Haven't got...
No, of course it is, because it's being starved of what
it's an awful
it
lot
needs.
Of money to starve people with, isn't it?
It's being starved of what it's needed in order to provide services, even to the standard that the government accepts it should be. It is not being properly funded, and people recognise that, and what they see in these documents is a government that has lied about the discussions that are taking place, and a government that is prepared to do a deal with the Americans that would enable big American drug companies and healthcare companies to come in and attack services that we provide in the NHS to take profit out there. Trump and Lighthizer, his trade representative, have both said that they want Britain to pay more for drugs so that they in America can pay less. We in the Labour Party will not allow that to
happen.
Well,
it's a drop in the ocean, isn't it? But listen, I know we haven't got an awful lot of time.
$27 billion is not a drop in the ocean.
It's a drop in the ocean as far as the American drug market is concerned, if you'd let me finish the sentence.
Well, I thought you had to finish the sentence.
Listen, let me ask you one final thing, because I know time is short. Boris Johnson has been accused by the Labour Party press office today of being sexist and misogynist. You've put somebody to work and dug out a lot of his old articles in The Spectator. Is that not playing the man rather than the ball?
Look, I don't believe that, politics should be personalised.
Well, this is very personalised.
I'm just saying, it's not the way I like to do things. I like to focus on policies. There's been a lot of playing the man, not only on Boris Johnson, but also on Jeremy Corbyn. I think you'd agree. I'm...
Well, he never seems to get criticised for his personal life, Jeremy Corbyn, does he?
I'm sorry. I think if you look at who has been more attacked and vilified... personally in the press, it's probably Jeremy Corbyn. But the point I wanted to make to you is that I believe that we should focus in politics on policies. I don't believe that it should be on personalities, but I do believe that if people lie, right, and we have a prime minister.
This is about his opinions. This is about his opinions written in Spectator columns. It's not about whether he's told the truth or not. It's about somebody having opinions. Well, he's being accused by Shami Chakrabarti, a senior member of your party, of being a sexist and a misogynist on the basis of what he's written about.
Well, if he's written things which are disparaging of women, I think it's perfectly right to call him out on that. Because as Prime Minister of the country, if you are making sexist remarks, or if you're calling, people of different faiths pillar boxes and
well,
so you,
we
on,
know that that's the, all been taken yeah, out of but, context, don't but, we? Well,
no, I, look, the point is this. It is totally inappropriate language for a Prime Minister to be using, either about women or about religious
minorities.
These are
things that he wrote when he wasn't Prime Minister.
That's not the point.
Oh, really?
They show what his true feelings are. Mm. They show the way in which he regards people. Now, as I say, I would much rather focus on policies. I think it's
maybe you should tell the press office that.
Well, You know, my role here is to come and talk to you about the policies that we have to improve our schools, to make sure that they're properly funded, to make sure that we have a decent social care system for our elderly, which we don't have, which the Tories... you will remember Boris Johnson on the steps of Downing Street when he was given the premiership by the Conservative Party. He said he had a plan for social care, but... it's not there. There's nothing in this manifesto about it. I think people have to look at what this man has said and then what he's done. And the fact is that he doesn't match up. That's why people don't trust him.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of distrust in this election, I fear. But Barry Gardiner, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Barry Gardiner is, of course, standing for the Labour Party in Brent North. Amongst the other candidates, Anjana Patel from the Conservative Party, Simon David Rebbitt from the Green Party, Noel Coonan from the Independent, an Independent, Elsinna Jeffers, Independent, Paul Lawber, Liberal Democrats, and Susie O'Brien from the Brexit Party.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, we spoke to Barry Gardiner in the last hour, who talks an awful lot about how he thought it was much fairer to attack people's policies rather than their personality. But I'm putting it out there to you that this is maybe turning into a bit of a nasty election. It might get even nastier before it's over in a couple of weeks' time. Let's talk to Mark Francois, see what he makes of all of that. Mark, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. We're seeing stories coming out from people like Ian Duncan Smith that you know, he's getting threats all the time from people over in Essex where he's running. He's been told that somebody's going to burn down his constituency office, and he's been getting death threats. We've now got the Labour Party having to go at Boris Johnson over his sexist and misogynist columns in the Spectator. How are you finding it out there, Mark, on the campaign trail?
Well, look, I mean, to deal with IDS's situation first, I've been over there myself. I went to, you know, to give him a hand the other week.
Yeah.
I mean, what is going on, Mike, is that momentum in London are particularly focusing on Ian because he's a former Tory party leader.
Yeah.
And because he's been involved in, you know, benefit reform and things like universal credit. And, you know, they've got a right to go and deliver leaflets and knock on doors like anybody else. That's democracy. What they don't have a right to do is to threaten to burn down his office, you know, to attack it and to graffiti it. Mm. So you've got a particular situation there where some momentum activists are violent in nature, or at least in inclination. And that's why, you know, IDS put some of this stuff on social media and it went viral.
Presumably, momentum would deny that they're in any way involved in any of this, though, wouldn't they?
Well, of course. Well, you know, in the words of Mandy Rice Davis, well, they would say that, wouldn't they?
Yes.
But I'm not suggesting that, you know, the head of momentum, that John Lansman, has ordered this. I'm absolutely not suggesting that. But what I am saying is some people that are members of that movement almost certainly have been involved in this. And, you know, when Ian put some of this up on social media, some of the reaction he got was extremely aggressive, you know, along the lines of, you know, you bloody well deserve it, mate, or, you know, far worse than that. So
right.
I'm not imagining these people that have been posting on his...
Oh, no, I'm sure you're not. But it is a very toxic election at the moment, isn't it? I mean, it seems to me, I put this to Barry Gardiner as well, I mean, he sort of snapped yesterday at a journalist because he dared to ask a question that he didn't fancy answering. You know, there's a kind of, there's a sort of atmosphere now in almost all of these political gatherings where the plan seems to be pack it with, you know, a rather Trump-like kind of audience, so everybody's cheering all the time, and the journalists are kind of feeling the pain as well.
Well, look, Mike, you know, I've had occasions when, you know, I've not always been happy with what some journalists have asked me. But, you know, within reason, you take the rough with the smooth.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of the overall atmosphere, well, the election certainly has taken place against a background of national frustration. That, you know, despite a very clear decision in the referendum to leave, we haven't done so after more than 3 years. Why? Because a lot of Labour and Liberal MPs, and I'm sad to say a few former Conservatives as well, did everything they could for 3 years, pulled every parliamentary trick in the book to stop us leaving the European Union, to stop Brexit, despite the fact that everyone at the time of the referendum swore blind they would respect the result. So, yes, you have had an atmosphere of frustration, and that's why, in the end, the PM had no option but to call an election, you know, to kind of to lance the ball, to clear the logjam, to mix metaphors. So, yes, it has taken place against a background of a lot of people being wound up, but that is no excuse to attack someone's constituency office, regardless of what party they represent.
No, exactly right. And how are you finding it out there on the doorsteps? Is it a land of frustration? Is it a land of hope? Is it a land of kind of pessimism or optimism? What are people saying to you?
Well, look, I know we're not allowed to mention individual seats because of electoral law, so I'll try and avoid that.
Okay.
But, you know, I was up in the northeast earlier this week because my former researcher is standing in a constituency. And so I was up there and I was out canvassing in, you know, Labour's absolute traditional heartland. And the thing that I got again and again on, as it, what you might call, quotes, Labour doorsteps, if you see what I mean, was people saying, I'm not going to vote for Corbyn.
Right.
They weren't saying, I'm not going to vote Labour, interestingly. They were saying, I'm not going to vote for Corbyn because, and I've had, by the way, exactly the same on lots of doorsteps in Essex and in multiple constituencies in Essex, by the way. So, you know, people in the northeast, in many senses, I've got a lot in common with my constituents in Essex. They're hardworking and patriotic, and for them, Corbyn is toxic.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously, if this particular poll in the Times today is anywhere near correct, even if it's only half right, as I've said earlier, and the Tories end up with a 34-seat majority, that would be probably better than any of you could have hoped, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, the PM's case has been, we need a Conservative majority, a clear majority, in order to get the bill through so that we can genuinely leave the European Union. Now, you know, Churchill famously said one is enough, but, you know, people can fall ill or you know, whatever. So, you know, you want a bit more than that. You don't really want the majority that turns up in a taxi. So, you know, we would obviously like to win with a good majority, in order that we can finally break the logjam. And I'm, but one thing that will be important in this, remember, this is one opinion poll, and, you know, I this is my seventh general election, Mike, so, you know, you get different polls in the course of a campaign, although admittedly...
Well, it's your third one in 4 years, isn't it, as well?
Well, absolutely. Well, look, I knocked on one door, and one bloke said to me, he said, for God's sake, don't do this again in a hurry. He says, your third election in 4 years,
right.
He said, you know, he said, for goodness sake, you know, win this properly and don't make us do it again. And I said, well, you know, I'm doing my best.
Well, it is a bit ironic, isn't it, that ever since we've had a fixed-term parliament, we've had more elections than you can shake your stick at.
Well, look, I mean, in the Tory manifesto, it says very clearly we're going to repeal that.
Yeah.
Clearly proven to be complete nonsense. But, look, I mean, one interesting thing about the poll that you mentioned is it does show that in quite a few seats, you know, in very traditional Labour seats, the Tory candidate is within striking distance of winning. And the difference between winning and not winning is the number of people who said they're going to vote for the Brexit Party. So in quite a few seats, particularly in the Midlands and the North, if those people who presumably want to vote, want to leave the European Union because they're inclined to vote for the Brexit Party, but who, according to this poll, aren't going to win. The poll says Brexit aren't going to win any seats at all. But if those people vote Brexit, that's their democratic right, the Tory in that seat might just miss. If they vote Tory, we could actually win a number of seats absolutely in Labour's backyard. And, you know, I've never met a Brexit Party supporter that wanted a Marxist government.
No, very much so. And I think the interesting thing as well about this poll is that it is quite a small margin of error as well. So 2 or 3 points one way or the other could make a massive difference. What about after the result is arrived at? If indeed the Tories do have quite a decent majority, do you worry that there will be people, as we saw previously throughout the course of this year, doing absolutely anything they can do to stop it from happening?
Well, look, all 635 Conservative candidates in this election, all of them, have signed the pledge to support the Prime Minister's deal if elected.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not the chief whip, but if I were, and any Tory who signed that pledge then gets into the House of Commons and says, do you know what, I've slightly changed my mind, I would come down on them like a ton of bricks. Because I would say, you stood on a manifesto that's perfectly plain that you want to support Brexit and leave the EU. You signed a pledge to say as much. I'm terribly sorry. If you didn't want to do it, you shouldn't have signed it. So I think you can pretty much guarantee that those Tory MPs who get elected are going to be supporting Boris's deal. Because if not, I think they're in for the mother of all interviews without coffee.
Well, let's not forget, though, that that's what's happened in the past. You know, every Conservative MP who was in the last Parliament promised to honour the result of the referendum, and several of them didn't do so.
I get that, Mike, and I did say in my earlier remarks, you know, Lib Dem, Labour, and unfortunately some Tory MPs. So you're perfectly right to pull me up on it. But what I'm saying is, having been through 3 years of this nausea, then we've made absolutely clear to every candidate that if they win, they are expected to vote to take us out of the European Union. So there is absolutely no ambiguity whatsoever. And some of those people who were former Tory MPs are standing for re-election. According to this poll, none of them will win. But, you know, I'm the last person to advocate any kind of complacency. We've got 2 weeks to go, and we don't want to take our foot off the pedal. And, you know, I would want to wake up on the morning of the 13th of December, living in the United Kingdom. I'm perfectly happy with the independent republic of Mike Graham. I don't want the Marxist republic of Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, everybody,
and I don't think anybody else does either.
No, I mean, I was going to say, well, everybody's happy with the independent republic of Mike Graham. That's probably slightly over-egging the pudding. What do you make of the Institute for Fiscal Studies today? They're being very busy this election. Today they've come out and said that neither Labour nor the Tories have got credible plans to manage public finances.
Well, I mean, they've had a go at both of us to some extent. I think it's fair to say they've had a much bigger go at Labour. I mean, you know, by a country mile, really. I mean, that whole, you know, this $1.2 trillion spending plan that, oh, by the way, no one who earns less than 80K is going to pay a penny to all, oh, unless, of course, you're married.
Right.
And so on and so on. I mean, I think that's already completely unravelled. You know, the IFS are there to hold politicians to account. But I think the reason genuinely that our plans are a lot more credible is because we managed to reduce the deficit we inherited in 2010 from 10% of GDP then to 1% of GDP now, which is a lot lower than many other EU countries, by the way. Now, that has involved some extremely difficult decisions. I've seen that in my own constituency. So, you know, none of that has been done lightly. But because we've managed to get public spending genuinely back under control, Mike, again, by having to take very difficult decisions, I think, you know, we've got a degree of credibility on this that, you know, that basically, you know, the Labour Party just don't have. And my plea to the electorate would be, they nearly bankrupted us last time. For God's sake, don't hand back the car keys to the people who crashed the car.
Mark, thanks very much indeed. Mark Francois there, who is a Conservative Party candidate, of course, for Rayleigh and Wickford. Amongst the other candidates, Paul Richard Thorogood from the Green Party, David Flack from the Labour Party, Ron Tindall from the Liberal Democrats. This is Talk Radio. Give us a call. 0344 499 1000 is the number.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Talk Radio. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000 is the number. John says this about the NHS. The Americans are the world's largest drug makers, and 95% of drugs sold there are cheaper than they are in the EU. So how are the drugs going to be dearer if we source more from them and less from the European Union? Well, that's quite a good point that is very well made. I think the problem for anyone trying to decipher what it is that the NHS is going to be suffering from is that there is no clear statement, really, from anyone about which bits of it are going to be sold off. Let's talk to Greg, who's in Edinburgh and wants to talk about manifestos. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning. Thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, I was just to make just to go over a couple of points that you'd raised during your talk with Mr. Francois,
yeah.
And then previously with your previous guest. It was about that people, I think, are just sick of the entire political system in this country,
yeah.
and that they're sick of MPs, are sick of politicians. And you mentioned, you know, about the Brexit Party being slightly amateurish,
yeah.
in the way they were going about things. But that's the point. It's because they're not politicians. A lot of the candidates are just people from other walks of life that have decided to get involved. And in contrast to that, you mentioned about the manifestos being uncosted, being, you know, about planting trees, and that nobody has an idea how they've just picked figures out of the air.
Yeah.
And that's because they themselves have no clue what they're putting in their manifestos. I mean, for example, the last Conservative manifesto, it was written by two people, both of whom had no contact with the real world.
Mm.
And the Labour manifesto is the same. You know, it's written by two workers for the party who've always worked for the party.
Yeah, and I suspect they've probably done some kind of, you know, focus group activity where they've asked people what's important to them, and then they go, oh, look, a lot of people think this is important, let's do that.
Yeah, but sadly, Mr. Francois there, he highlighted exactly the problem. He mentioned the fact that he'd been up in the northeast of England campaigning on behalf of his researcher.
Yeah.
So he goes from university, researcher, MP, writing a manifesto, and he never has any contact with business, with working in the public sector, and that's what people are sick of.
Mm.
MPs and politicians who live in a complete bubble and you know, don't really have any idea of what life in the country is like.
I mean, it's the age of the sort of professional politician, isn't it? That's what you're saying, because there was a time when people went into politics after having done something else.
Exactly.
Mm.
And now you get so many young people that you want everyone to be 70 and 60 or whatever. But you want people to have actually lived.
Yes.
And worked in business, worked in the health service, worked in a factory, and know what they're talking about when it's, well, I don't know how many bricks it takes to build a house.
Right.
So, all right, let's build a million houses. You know, it's just, and then that's why people get disillusioned, because they write the manifestos, and they can't keep to their promises.
Well, of course they can't. I mean, imagine trying to plant enough trees to cover Wales. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
That's the best. It sounds good. It thinks, and the thing is, they think we're stupid.
Yeah.
And that's the insulting thing, and that's why people are really, really hacked off with politicians, that they're the liars and they're the incompetents, but they think we're the stupid ones.
Well, I know. That's the point. And, in fact, Boris Johnson's been criticised quite heavily this morning because he has yet still to agree to a time when he's going to go into Andrew Neil's studio and be interviewed by Andrew Neil in the same way that Nicola Sturgeon was, in the same way that Jeremy Corbyn was, and in the same way that Joe Swinson is going to be as well. Greg, thanks for your call. Let's talk to Simon, who's in Orpington. Hi, Simon.
Hi, good morning, Mike.
Morning.
Just my two pennies worth on this poll that came out yesterday. Reassuring to see it, but I was reminded this morning about your call with Katy Perry a few days back, where she's saying, actually, if you're in the lead, you don't necessarily want this poll coming out because it does lead to complacency.
Yes.
And also, I think as well, that's something to really rally the Labour activists around and to get out there. I think there is a big danger of complacency in this vote. A lot of us thinking, well, I kind of want to go this way or the other, but what's really the point if this is going to be the outcome anyway?
Yeah. I mean, I think people are generally speaking quite savvy about what their sort of situation is vis-a-vis, you know, if it's a very strong Tory seat, they might not go out and vote because they might not feel they need to. And if it is a very strong Tory seat or a very strong Labour seat, chances are it will stay that way. But the trouble is, you never really know in an election like this.
I guess you don't know, no. And I think that's why, like, let's say Boris does come home with a stonking majority on the 13th. I'd be relieved, but I won't necessarily be celebrating, because I feel that we're still going to have the two-party system where a lot of people do feel that, you know, their vote does get wasted. And then my question would be, well, who is actually going to keep the Conservative Party conservative? Because it's been for the last, you know, maybe five, six more years, it's been Farage and UKIP. If you take this Australian-style immigration policy, that's a UKIP policy.
Yeah.
Now, Boris is promising it now to get the Brexit Party vote. Let's say the Brexit Party is taken out, which I think it will be on the 13th. Who's actually going to hold him to that? So that I guess that is my concern. And the other sort of final point I'll make as well, I feel as well with Labour, I feel like they've gone to the breaking emergency glass way too early, and it shows their desperation.
Well, I think that business yesterday, it seemed to me, I don't know if you felt the same way, that you're exactly right, that this was the kind of the trump card, if you'll pardon the expression, that they suddenly pulled out of the pack and went, right, have a go at this then, because then at least you'll stop talking about all the anti-Semitism and the Andrew Neilies of you.
Definitely. And do you know what, Mike? Corbyn's on stage waving a piece of paper saying, look what I've found. And it says on it 2017 to 2018.
Yeah.
Shows how pathetic it is. I really think on this one, I think it's actually a disgraceful strategy from Labour that they're saying to people who, some people on low incomes, they're relying on their drugs week by week and their weekly appointments with their doctors. And they're putting the fear of God into them saying, this may be taken away from you.
Yeah.
I think it's a completely wrong strategy. As I say, people should stop getting so triggered by the big red bus and actually be outraged at this. I hope in many years to come, Labour will hold their head in shame over this strategy.
Well, let's see how it works out for them, because it doesn't even play a part in this particular poll, which is in the paper today, because it will probably play a part in the polls at the weekend. And we'll see whether or not the interview that Jeremy Corbyn gave to Andrew Neil, and as I say, Boris Johnson is yet to do that one, and he's being accused of running scared because he may not do it. He may choose not to sit in with Andrew Neil, which would, I think, be a mistake on his part, but also the business of this NHS document, in which the NHS in 451 pages is only mentioned four times. We'll see in the poll at the weekend whether that has backfired on Jeremy Corbyn or not.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're here until 1 o'clock when Matthew Wright takes over, and I'm delighted to say that we are now joined by Rebecca Perfect from Love the Revision, which is an Instagram account, Rebecca, which aims, it says here, to make your home look lovely for less.
Well, that is the aim, yes,
and
I do try.
And you do some very nice little videos. I've seen some of them on your Instagram account about things that people can do around the house. You'd probably make an absolute fortune changing my house around, because not the one that where my kids and their mother live, but the one in London, which is just where I am when I'm working, because it's a bit of a sort of bachelor pad, really.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. You know, that'd be a challenge, a bachelor pad. What would you like to make it more feminine?
I don't know, really. Not particularly, no. I've got lots of piles of things.
Right, you know? So you need storage.
So I probably could do with more storage, but I can never be bothered actually organising it. So
well, I think we could do some like IKEA hacks for you, things like that.
Something
you know?
Like that, Now, today we're going to talk about houseplants, because I remember seeing a story a couple of weeks ago in which it said that even though people would quite like to put houseplants inside their houses because it's supposed to change the atmosphere and change the environment.
Yeah, oxygenate.
It doesn't actually do that.
Oh, that's disappointing.
But I don't know whether that matters, does it? Because, I mean, I can't grow anything in my place. I mean, I had a cactus once for a while, and even that wouldn't grow.
I had a funny conversation with a friend the other day who was equally as plant-obsessed as I am, and she was devastated because she went away for a week. This was during the most recent half term, and came back, and her entire plant collection was infested with some weird spider.
Oh, God.
And so she was like, how have we even done this? Right. You know, there's nothing that could have caused this. And so then that is hundreds of pounds gone down the drain all of a sudden, and she has to kind of start again.
But I mean, I have, over the time that I've been alive, been given responsibility for watering plants, and I've usually managed to do that without killing them all off in other places that I wasn't actually living. But I just can't grow anything in my own place. I don't know what it's about.
Well, atmosphere, I suppose, whether or not it's getting enough light.
I used to smoke a lot. I don't smoke anymore.
That might be something to do with it. They might be non-smoking plants.
Yes, although there are probably plants that you can get that would probably somehow eat the smoke, wouldn't they?
Well, quite possibly. There's a man-eating plant out there somewhere as well, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There is, in the jungle somewhere. So, I mean, what is this new trend all about? Why are more people getting more houseplants?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of stylistically, I think in your home you want to add little accents. Maybe it's a cost-effective way to kind of upgrade your home. So for me, I always think a little bit of greenery goes a long way. So I've just renovated a rental flat. In terms of putting it on the market, when I wanted to get the photos done with my estate agent, I made sure that I brought some plants in to style it, real and faux, to be honest, because a little bit of draping plants in the bathroom can really add a little pop of colour there, here and there. I got a lovely palm that filled an empty space in the kitchen, and it just made that whole place feel more homely. There's something about plants that works in that way. Flowers, I think, are lovely, but you know, you put a vase of flowers out, it will last for a week. That's great. Plants,
they start to smell bad as well, don't
they? Yeah, and the water looks a little bit murky and all that kind of stuff. Whereas green plants, which is what we're seeing a real rise in, like mother-in-law's tongue plants. We've got lots of aloes, loads of those kind of plants that are easy to maintain.
Right.
Cheese plants, for instance. They're huge, make a massive impact.
They were a big thing in the 80s, cheese. Everybody had a cheese plant in the 80s.
Well, we're seeing a really big resurgence of 70s and 80s. You know, last year and the year before, we saw macrame as a big kind of comeback craft that everyone was doing. And with that, what came with macrame were hanging plants. Mm. So, you know, if you've got some of those hanging planters at home, you might want to start filling them with your plants. And I've seen
they're difficult to water, though, aren't they? Because if you water them, doesn't the water come out at the bottom?
Not if you've got a special little tray underneath.
Well, if it's hanging?
You see,
this is one of the problems. I can't envisage it, you see. I can't quite see it. I'll tell you what I
have need had. To come around and do a makeover.
I'll tell you what I have had, and people have been making fun of me for it since I mentioned it. One of my kids came up last Christmas, and we decided we'd just buy a little Christmas tree. You know, spending a couple of nights there.
Bit early.
This was last year.
Okay,
right?
Fine, yeah.
And then when Christmas came and went, I thought to myself, it's only about 2 feet tall, this thing, and it sits on a table in the living room.
Yeah.
I'm just going to leave it up because I would have to make room for it in the wardrobe, right? So I just left it up, and I didn't leave the lights on it. I just left it without lights, and it's been sitting there all year. So it's still okay? It's plastic.
Oh, right. Okay,
you know,
fine.
It's
fine. Okay.
So I've now switched the lights back on because now it's Christmas again. And, you know, it's been quite nice.
And it's a really quick and easy way to get Christmas ready, right?
It is.
Yeah.
And I've wrapped a couple of presents, put them under there. He's coming back again, I think, next week.
Boy, you're efficient.
Yeah. And, you know, so in a way, you could almost have... And every time I looked at it, I thought, it's like a plant in the house.
Oh, that's
People
good.
Are now
I'm
thinking
impressed.
I've gone completely insane. I think.
A little bit, yeah. I'm humouring you slightly.
I know. But, I mean, you know, it doesn't make sense, does it, to make space in a cupboard to put something away just because it's a Christmas tree?
Well, do you know what? I've heard something really interesting in terms of an eco thing with trees and also money saving in some respects. People are renting Christmas trees now.
Really?
Yes. So you can go and you can go to a Christmas tree yard, shall we say, and you can rent
like a farm.
Yes, you can rent your tree, and then when you're done with it, instead of throwing it out and being collected by the local council, you can take it back to that farm, and they will replant it so that next year it can be used again.
Why don't you just plant it in your own garden, and you can just keep
using
it?
Well, I did do that one year, and it did survive.
Does that work?
Yeah, it does work. Yeah.
Because I mean, what about the fake plants thing you mentioned? Because you were saying you can use fake plants if you want, but are they now made of other things other than plastic?
I'm not so sure on that. To be honest, they're probably made of lots of different things depending on the style of plant to get the look and the effect. For me, one of the benefits of faux plants is if you're not very green-fingered, as I'm not, so I always try and get those. I look up plants that are really hard to kill, first and foremost. So aloe vera's up there is a big one. You can barely try and kill that. But if I do need to get something that is, you know, there are string of pearls plants that you can get, those lovely hanging ones. I've tried to keep them and I kill them every time and it costs me a fortune. So I thought, do you know what? I'm just on those type of things. I'm going to get.
The faux ones are going to be less messy as well,
yes,
aren't they?
Yeah, less maintenance.
Or if you've got a pet or something that knocks them over, that's not good either.
Absolutely. So for me, plants make a big difference in whatever space you're in. So if you have, you know, you like to keep things tidied away and quite sparse and just, you know, very clean and clinical, just a tiny little plant that is positioned and styled correctly, maybe on a kitchen island or on a dining table, can just add a little bit of pizzazz. And I think that's why we're seeing not only more florists popping up, but we're also seeing a lot more dedicated plant shops that literally focus on green plants, you know, because they're very on trend at the moment. So you can do lots of different things with those. And those are the ones that I've noticed in South London. We're seeing some Dulwich, Brixton, Streatham, those kind of areas. We're suddenly seeing dedicated plant shops showing up.
Okay, and where are you with buying things like, you know, the old coriander plant or the parsley plant? Well, yeah, because, I mean, you can put them in the kitchen.
Yes.
And you can also use them.
Yes.
But they don't seem to grow back, do they?
No.
Which is a bit of a worry.
I did try once. I realised I'm not that good a cook. I'm not as good a cook and baker as you, Mike.
You know, we've had this conversation earlier, haven't we?
We have indeed. I'm looking forward to next week. When
I'm not sure
something.
I'm going to have time to. I mean, there's an election on, you know. I haven't got time to start baking scones or something for you know, but we shall see.
It will keep us going through the election stuff.
Yeah.
So those kind of things, again, you know, they're a nice, cheap, easy way to bring a bit of greenery in there. If you know, a nice sprig of rosemary or things like that, or some parsley, will fill up a windowsill.
It's a nice scent as well.
Yeah, exactly. A mint plant, if you can put that.
I mean, there are some people who grow things like tomatoes in a window box. I mean, remember when I lived in New York, when people were kind of like, you know, they didn't really have any outdoor space, but if they had somewhere to put a window box, they would grow stuff in it.
Yeah, and there's loads of really nice ways to kind of dress all of that. You know, you can be a bit crafty and just make a really nice kind of little window box. You know, even if you just have a little balcony, you know, you live in a flat and you've just got that space, having little hooks on the side of your plant pots that can just have that. It just, you know what, whether or not it has health benefits or not, who knows? At the end of the day, it definitely adds a positive spin.
It makes you feel better.
It does make you feel better,
and that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Of course.
In the end.
Yeah.
Rebecca Perfect, thank you very much
indeed.
You're
very welcome.
Love the Revision is the name of the Instagram account. Go check it out. Rebecca will be back, I dare say, next week with Julia Hartley Brewer, telling her all about the movies to watch as well. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.